that light starts at the moment of conception. And like I said, world-leading geneticists acknowledge this, even Watson and Crick. And now, Appendix A in R.C. Sproul's Abortion, A Rational Look at an Emotional Issue, in Appendix A, he has the testimony on the beginning of human life, which has Dr. Jerome Lejeune's testimony in court on this. It was a trial about in vitro fertilization, which enabled a previously barren woman to have children. Now, the couple got a divorce, and they were arguing over their rights to the frozen embryos. And so I think one of the spouses didn't want to pay the storage for these thousands of frozen embryos, and the other one didn't want them to be killed. And so they brought him as an expert witness to argue that embryos are human beings. Human embryos are human beings. Now, the following transcript is a portion of the court proceedings, Circuit Court, Blount County, State of Tennessee, Maryville, August 10th, 1989, in which Jerome Lejeune, who's both an MD and a PhD, testified. So he's a genetic expert, research-wise, PhD, but also he's a practical medical doctor as well, that he can actually perform the duties there. Dr. Lejeune is professor of fundamental genetics at the Faculty of Medicine of Paris. He holds the Kennedy Prize for being the first to discover a disease caused by chromosomal abnormality, Down syndrome. Now, throughout history, when somebody's had Down syndrome, we knew something was wrong. We knew that they were somehow mentally handicapped, but we didn't know why. He was the one who discovered the chromosomal abnormality called Down syndrome. And so he received the Kennedy Prize, which for geneticists is pretty much the equivalent of the Nobel Prize. So this is a cream of the crop guy. This is not a fly-by-night guy. Okay, and here's one of his answers. And if I could say so, I would say that life has a very long history, but each of us has a unique beginning, the moment of conception. As soon as the 23 chromosomes, now I'm just reading excerpts here, we'd be here all night if I wasn't. As soon as the 23 chromosomes carried by the sperm encounter the 23 chromosomes carried by the ovum, the whole information necessary and sufficient to spell out all the characteristics of the new being is gathered. When this information carried by the sperm and by the ovum has encountered each other, then a new human being is defined because its own personal and human constitution is entirely spelled out. He says a new life will begin when a female and a male cell will encounter to produce the next generation. And I would say that science has a very simple conception of man. As soon as he has been conceived, a man is a man. And then the attorney who's questioning him says, will you concede, Dr. Lejeune, there are other distinguished scientists, men who are as learned as you, who have thought and who have access to the same scientific information that you have, who come to a different conclusion. Lejeune responded, about what? About the moral rights or moral duty to the zygote. Oh, now Lejeune's answering, oh, in that case, yes. But not about the fact it's a human being or not. Then the lawyer said, I understand that. And then Lejeune said, but that's the point. So what Dr. Jerome Lejeune was saying is, look, as one of the world's leading genetic experts, what I'm telling you is this. Human life starts at the moment of conception. I'm not a lawyer. I'm not a judge. I'm not a politician. I'll let them debate about whether or not all human beings at all stages of human life have the right to life, liberty, pursuit of happiness. I'll let the politicians and the lawyers debate that. But I'm telling you, as a genetic expert, there is no debate. Human life starts at the moment of conception. Not only did he know it, Watson and Crick, who are pro-abortion, they knew it too, but they don't mind man playing God and taking a human life. Now, Practical Ethics is the second edition by Peter Singer, published by Cambridge University Press, which is supposed to be the second greatest university on the planet Earth. And I'm going to read some extended quotes from Peter Singer just to show you that there's no debate from the world's leading pro-abortion thinkers about human life starting at the moment of conception. Here's what Singer says on page 169 of Practical Ethics. I have argued that the life of a fetus, and even more plainly of an embryo, is of no greater value than the life of a non-human animal at a similar level of rationality, self-consciousness, awareness, capacity to feel, etc. And that since no fetus is a person, he's not denying the humanity of the fetus, you have to have a certain level of self-consciousness to be classified as a person by Peter Singer. It's an arbitrary line that he's drawing. He's playing God, his colleagues are playing God with him. And that since no fetus is a person, no fetus has the same claim to life as a person. Now, it must be admitted that these arguments apply to the newborn baby as much as to the fetus. This is where abortion leads to infanticide, killing babies already born. Now, it must be admitted that these arguments apply to the newborn baby as much as to the fetus. A weak-old baby is not a rational and self-conscious being, and there are many non-human animals whose rationality, self-consciousness, awareness, capacity to feel, and so on exceed that of a human baby a week or a month old. If the fetus does not have the same claim to life as a person, it appears that the newborn baby does not either, and the life of a newborn baby is of less value to it than the life of a pig, a dog, or a chimpanzee is to the non-human animal. Now, you gotta understand, he is saying that because a newborn baby does not have the same level of self-consciousness and self-awareness, what he calls personhood, that a full-grown pig or chimpanzee, since it has a higher level of self-awareness, self-consciousness, a higher level of personhood, a full-grown pig or chimpanzee, they value their life more than a newborn baby values its life. But that's the way he defines personhood, and humans don't have any right to life, but persons do. So in other words, because the human baby doesn't know much and isn't conscious of its own existence as far as Singer is concerned, since it doesn't value its life as much as a full-grown pig, chimpanzee, or dog for that matter, since it doesn't value its life as much as those animals do, then those animals' lives are more valuable than that newborn baby. So what he's okay with is parents. If the parents, who are persons, vest in their infant their value, in other words, they value it, then if they want to take care of it, fine. But if the parents don't want it and the doctor doesn't want it, it is not a human being that was created in God's image. It has no real value there. Okay? It kind of makes me wonder, that recent incident with the gorilla and the baby, the gorilla has a much higher level of self-consciousness, I think, than that baby. I don't know how old the baby was, but it might be just at the border to where maybe even Peter Singer, who's the father of the animal rights movement, I need to see what Singer said about that they killed the gorilla. So he might have been really upset with that. And maybe he would have thought maybe negotiations should have been attempted. But but that's really interesting. What if you have a newborn baby and a gorilla holds it in its arms, and you know that the gorilla, the way it treats baby gorillas, this baby's going to die if we don't kill the gorilla. I wonder if Singer, which side he'd be on. Now, I know exactly what he would say. If the parents value their child, then we're pitting the parents against the gorilla. So there'd be at least equal status if not finding some kind of way to put the humans above the animal. Here's something he says on page 216. The essential difference, I'm talking about the difference between my view and the Nazis' views. The essential difference in the aims of Nazi euthanasia and modern proposals may be granted, but the slippery slope argument could still be defended as a way of suggesting that the present strict rule against the direct killing of innocent human beings serves a useful purpose. So he's saying, look, the Nazis had a different goals for their euthanasia. We want to do the same things the Nazis did, but for different goals, and we're doing it for the betterment of mankind. He calls himself a utilitarian, so he believes in the greatest good for the greatest number, which sometimes means discarding humans who haven't attained to the level of personhood. He talks about ancient Greeks regularly killed or exposed infants on 217, page 217. In traditional Eskimo societies, it was the custom for a man to kill his elderly parents. And so he's, you know, acting like, you know, these things are should not be the big problems that we make it out to be. He says back on page 170, in general, since infants are harmless and morally incapable, now keep in mind, Peter's he's the father or the founder of the modern animal rights movement. He's considered one of the most brilliant guys on the planet Earth. At Princeton University, he's like a guru. People flock him. Now, whenever he gets protested, even there in New Jersey, half the people are in wheelchairs that are protesting him. Because they see the writing on the wall. Says, in general, since infants... this is... When I argue for the death of Western civilization, what I'm arguing, Nietzsche said, if God is dead, truth is dead, morality is dead, meaning is dead, and it's going to produce a Superman. C.S. Lewis and Francis Chambers, two Christians, realized, if God is dead, man is dead too. Now you take God out of the picture, and there's no basis to defend the sanctity of human life. Singer says, in general, since infants are harmless and morally incapable of committing a crime, those who kill them lack the excuses often offered for the killing of adults. None of this shows, however, that the killing of an infant is as bad as killing as the killing of an innocent adult. It's almost like he's saying, they look cute and cuddly, so it's hard for us to feel comfortable killing them. But there really isn't any good reason why we should be upset about killing babies. If we could put aside these emotionally moving but strictly irrelevant aspects of the killing of a baby, we can see that the grounds for not killing persons do not apply to newborn infants. So here this guy's supposed to be an expert on what is right and what is wrong, and he makes a lot of money teaching there at Princeton, And he's made building a case here on page 171 for killing human newborn infants. It would, of course, be difficult to say at what age children begin to see themselves as distinct entities existing over time. No doubt children greatly vary in the age at which they begin to understand these matters. He says, there at least should be some considerations, page 172, which a full legal right to life comes into force, not at birth, but only a short time after birth, perhaps a month. This would provide the ample safety margin mentioned above. So he's talking about maybe we don't declare newborn babies, persons. He admits they're humans from the moment of conception, but maybe we wait till 1 month after birth and then declare them a person, but before that point they have no right to life. If these conclusions seem too shocking to take seriously, it may be worth remembering that our present absolute protection of the lives of infants is a distinctively Christian attitude rather than a universal ethical value. So he's basically saying, you know, if you're going to slam me for saying that it should be okay to kill newborn babies, you got to understand the whole idea that you don't kill newborn babies, especially if they're deformed and stuff, that's a Christian idea. Okay? So he would actually, if he heard me speak, he'd say, I disagree with everything that Francis says, but he's consistent. He's a Christian, and he knows that life starts at the moment of conception, and he believes that all human beings in any stage of life have the right to life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness. Said he's very consistent. I don't respect guys who are inconsistent. But then Singer would say, now I don't believe in God. I agree with Francis, human life starts at the moment of conception, but since God doesn't exist, the intellectuals can determine when a person has a right to life and when they don't. And let's see. But it is not easy to feel confident that we are more civilized than the best Greek and Roman moralists. It was not just the Spartans who exposed their infants on hillsides. Both Plato and Aristotle recommended the killing of deformed infants. Romans like Seneca, whose compassionate moral sense strikes the modern reader, or me anyway, as superior to that of the early and medieval Christian writers, also thought infanticide, killing babies already born, the natural and humane solution to the problem posed by sick and deformed babies. So he would have killed Thibault. The change in Western attitudes to infanticide since Roman times is like the doctrine of the sanctity of human life on which it is a part, a product of Christianity. So he's basically saying is, look, now we know that Christianity is not true. We don't believe in Christianity. We need to stop acting like Christianity is true. He says this in the appendix, page 337, on being silenced in Germany. From 1989-1990 winter semester, Dr. Hartmut Klient, a professor of philosophy at the University of Duisburg, small town in the north of Germany, offered a course in which my book, Practical Ethics, was the principal text assigned to the class. First published in English in 1979, this book has been widely used in philosophy courses in North America, the United Kingdom, and Australia, and has been translated into German, Italian, Spanish, and Swedish. Now, I'm not requiring it as a textbook, but that's the reason why I'm reading extended quotes. I want you to know what our schools are teaching in philosophy ethics courses. This is like a standard textbook. Until Klient announced his course, it had never evoked anything more than lively discussion. Klient's course, however, was subjected to organized and repeated disruption by protesters objecting to the use of the book on the grounds that in one of its 10 chapters, it advocates active euthanasia for severely disabled newborn infants, when after several weeks the dispositions showed no sign of abating, client was compelled to abandon the course. So he's acting like he's being persecuted. But look, it's not a coincidence that Germany, of all places, would not even allow Peter Singer to speak there for, I think it was like about a decade, and finally they let him in. And but Germany knew firsthand what went on with the Nazi atrocities. Says in another appendix on 342, my intention in these lectures was to defend a view for which I have argued in several previously published works that the parents of severely disabled newborn infants should be able to decide, together with their physician, whether their infant should live or die. If the parents and their medical advisor are in agreement that the infant's life will be so miserable or so devoid of minimal satisfactions that it would be inhumane or futile to prolong life, then they should be allowed to ensure that death comes about speedily and without suffering. So in some cases, Down syndrome, perhaps the outlook for the child might be for a life without suffering, but the child would need much more care and attention over a longer period than a normal child would require. Some couples, feeling that they were in no position to provide the care required, or that it would be harmful for their already existing family for them to try to do so, might oppose sustaining the infant's life. There may, however, be other couples willing to give the child an adequate home. In other words, if somebody wants to adopt a child, I'm okay with it, but if the parents want to just put the child out of its misery, fine. And he's talking about Down syndrome here. You know, some of the most beautiful people on the planet Earth have Down syndrome. The church says we're to comfort and care for these people. Peter Singer says kill them if you don't want them. I believe Peter Singer even took care of his mom when she had Alzheimer's. But that was his choice. If it was legal and his choice was to get rid of mom, then so be it. He believed he should have that right. The position is, of course, at odds with the conventional doctrine of the sanctity of human life. But there were well-known difficulties in defending that doctrine in secular terms without its traditional religious underpinnings. See, Peter Singer is a brilliant guy. He understands if you don't believe in the God of the Bible, there's no way to defend the sanctity of human life. Okay? And I literally mean the God of the Bible. Because it's only Judaism and Christianity that has the worldview that would make human life sacred. I mean, even if you turn to the Quran, how sacred does human life look if you're an infidel? These guys are blowing up women and children at will. But he says the sanctity of human life, there's well-known difficulties in defending that doctrine in secular terms, non-religious terms, without traditional religious underpinnings. Why, for example, if not because human beings are made in the image of God, should the boundary of sacrosanct life, of sacred life, match the boundary of our species? So in other words, except for the Bible, there's no reason to think that only human life should be sacred. Why not all animals? And so he gets into this personhood thing, which determines whether life, animal or human, has value and have a right to life. It's the level of self-consciousness. It doesn't matter if you're a gorilla, a chimpanzee, a pig, a dog, or a human being. And by the way, this a newly born, you know, he's trying to move things in his direction. You know, he's trying to, and he's like saying, well, you know, I'm drawing a distinction. The Nazis were doing it for evil. I'm doing it for good. No, the Nazis believed they were doing it for good. Just they had this weird view that the Aryan race was divine non-Aryans or subhumans, we need to exterminate them so they don't pollute the perfect bloodline of the Aryan race. But Hitler thought he was doing good. Now, he had about as warped a view as good as you can get, but Singer thinks he's doing good, and it's not much better. And he's talking about newborn infants, but you can carry this on. Wait a minute here. Just like Francis Schaeffer said, you legalize abortion, it will lead to infanticide, killing babies already born, and then it will lead to euthanasia, so-called mercy killing, killing of deformed people or whatever. But I mean, if you gotta have a certain level of self-consciousness, everybody in a coma doesn't have that level of self-consciousness. So if the family doesn't want them, so there's more than just infants. He's not just arguing. He doesn't have to argue for abortion. It's already legal. Now he's trying to push it into infanticide, but eventually it's going to be euthanasia as well. And to see where abortion leads to infanticide and euthanasia, in the 1980s, just a few years after abortion was legalized, baby Jane Doe was born with Down syndrome. An Indiana Supreme Court allowed the doctor and the parents to start the baby, and she died in 12 days. The 12 days of life. Now, apparently, certain babies with Down syndrome, certain of them are built with some kind of a problem with their esophagus to where they can't swallow food. So you got to feed them intravenously, and then you can correct it with simple surgery. The parents, because the baby had Down syndrome, didn't even want to have that surgery. By the way, so this was a type of Down syndrome where it was only to the degree where the kid could have grown up and held a job. Well, that, you know, it just takes love. It takes more love. You just gotta love. Children are a gift from God.
So, Peter Siegel, when he makes those claims, does he have any authority with which he's making those claims? And what authority does he use?
The authority that he uses is he correctly understands that if you don't believe in God,
there's no moral absolutes.
Well, if you don't believe in God, there's no moral absolutes, and all you have is man can play God. This is like Nietzsche's Superman. I think Friedrich Nietzsche would be very proud of Peter Singer. Mm-hmm. And to boldly, through his will to power, create his own. So in other words, Peter Singer and Watson and Crick understand if God is removed from the equation, man can play God. Now, I don't know where Nietzsche would be with Singer also as he's demoting humans. It's kind of like you promote your intellectual buddies who agree with you to the status of godhood. You're going to be the arbiter of what is true. You're going to create your own new truth, your new morality. You're going to determine who lives and who dies. Nietzsche's fine with that. Nietzsche's fine with discarding of humans if through the will to power, if that's what he really did. Nietzsche disliked the soft values of Christianity. I don't know how he would be with Peter Singer's love fest with the animal kingdom. Mm-hmm. So as he's demoting other humans, Nietzsche's okay. But as he's promoting animals, I don't know how much Nietzsche will go to. Now, Nietzsche did have one of his breakdowns when a guy was beating a horse and he started crying. And he hugged the horse and he kissed it. Mm-hmm. And then spent the rest of his life bedridden and not communicating. He died insane. And but I don't know if that's a statement on, you know, maybe he...
It's just, that's just such a weird worldview for me.
It's such a weird worldview. It's false.
Yeah.
It's ungodly. It's unethical. But what the five people in this room need to understand, okay? As far as our culture is concerned, and as far as the Western world is concerned, we are the idiots. people like Peter Singer, they're the brilliant ones. So as stupid and as ungodly and immoral and as weird as his views are, please remember this is the world in which we live. Now, I get slammed by other Christian leaders, usually because they haven't read as much as I've read on current secular and neo-pagan thought. Sometimes, though, I get slammed by other Christian philosophers who've read even more than me. And all I can figure is philosophers do like to fight things in the realm of ideas, but not every Christian thinker is like Francis Schaeffer or C.S. Lewis, who understands, okay, ideas have consequences. Even though we're going to sound like an idiot, we need to sound the alarm. But that's what I would say is, as weird as this sounds, and as ungodly and as demonic as this sounds, that is the normal guy. And that is the way the Hillary Clintons think. And so that's why I refer to what we're going into as the depraved new world. That's why I give lectures on the death of Western civilization. There's a chapter in a book on that and stuff. And all I'm saying is what C.S. Lewis said in the 1940s and what Schaeffer said in the 1970s, what I said in 87 in a book, and then I presented the paper, Death of Western Civilization, at a meeting of the Evangelical Theological Society in 1999. And so the alarm has been sounded for a long time. Unfortunately, we just don't get it, you know. So, and you know, I'm finding that I first debated the homosexuality issue in the early 1990s, public debate. I got saved in 81, but I didn't start debating until about 87. Debated the homosexuality issue in the early 1990s. Debated homosexual marriage in 2005. I thought that was really late, but I got the offer. And so it really amazes me that there are Christian pastors that tried to get me more involved in political debates that we lost on the philosophical level 20 years ago, when these same guys probably thought I was a nut to even take those debates. We spent a lot of time in the church trying to win debates we lost 20 years ago and not even realizing where things are. So for instance, an awful lot of Christians are trying to argue that an unborn baby is a human being, and they don't even realize the leaders of the pro-abortion movement already grant that, but they still want them dead. It's all right for us to recognize them as weird, ungodly, immoral, stupid ideas. Only a fool would believe that. The fact of the matter is, there's a lot more fools in America today than there are true Bible-believing Christians. So, you know, I had a student who visited Cal Davis, and this is what he told me. The tour they gave him, the whole campus is set up like a tree, and they've got a serpent pointing to the tree, and a tour guide told him that it's their rendition of the book of Genesis. So basically, when the serpent is tempting Adam and Eve to eat from the tree of the forbidden fruit, forbidden knowledge of good and evil, Cal Davis is saying that's what we're all about. And they believe that's just a myth. But what they're saying is everything Christianity stands for, we think is wrong. Everything Christianity opposes, we think is right. And Nietzsche called himself the Antichrist. And he knew that he was responding against that. Okay, now, Francis Crick, won the Nobel Prize in 1962 in psychology and medicine, along with James Watson and Maurice Wilkins, for breaking the DNA code. Crick stated, and I quote, this was, I think he said this though in the early 1970s, no newborn infant should be declared human. See, back then it was all about whether it's human or not. Now, he knew they were human, but he said no newborn infant should be declared human until it has passed certain tests regarding its genetic endowment, and that if it fails these tests, it forfeits the right to life, the right to live. Watson, that was what Crick stated. Watson said that the newborn shouldn't be declared human until 3 days after birth. Okay? Their argument would be updated today. They say, okay, well, everybody knows the human from the moment of conception. That secret got out. Now let's just say that they're not persons until a certain point. So they were saying 3 days in the 70s. Singer was saying a month when he wrote this. I think his colleagues talked to him, and he's really, yeah, I'm not being consistent. And he raised it up a little bit. Fact of the matter is, it's an arbitrary line wherever you draw it. So basically, no human being should have the right to life, in Peter Singer's view, unless they attain a certain level of self-awareness and mental health. But the disabled people see, man, he's gonna come for us too someday. These ideas are gonna come for us. But I tell you, you look at Peter Singer, and I mean, I'm not the most buff guy on the planet, but I don't know, maybe he knows karate or something. But I got a friend, Andre Sims, Pastor Andre Sims, that went to Liberty University with me, and he was on kind of the power team type of thing, about 5'11", weighs 260. Bench frying pans with his hands, breaks bats over his knees, blows up hot water bottles. I'm glad he's not defining what this master race is. You know, he wouldn't use the language master race, but that's what he's talking about. You got some humans who have the right to life, and other humans, like the Nazis said, who live lives not worthy of living. And
I just want to say, you can play that worldview out to its logical conclusion.
Yeah, what you will end up with, to the logical conclusion, I mean, what it is just whoever is what the lecture I gave last week, Thrasymachus said, if there's no such thing as right and wrong, then might is right. Mm-hmm. And so that's all it's going to come down to is those in positions of power are going to determine what is right and what is wrong. It can be arbitrary, just like C.S. Lewis said it would be in the abolition of man. And they're going to determine who lives and who dies. They're just going to play God. And that's what, you know, the Peter Singers, if I told him, you know, you're playing God, he'd say, well, somebody's got to. And that's just what Nietzsche was saying. If God is dead, everything changes. There's no more truth, no more morality, no more meaning. But we need those things. So we need a group of supermen who, through their will to power, create those things and give meaning to life. Now, partial birth abortions, which I don't even know what the status are of those. They got shut down after a while, but then they might have... But partial birth abortion is a form of infanticide, because you're already pulling the baby out of the womb. You know, you pull the baby's head out first, and the doctor crushes the skull, that's called murder. If you just pull out the feet and then insert something into the skull of the child and kill it, that's a legal abortion. Now, I'm not sure what the legal status of partial birth abortion is, but that's really an infanticide. And there's been many other babies that have been euthanized. So it's been going on. We're also euthanizing adults. We'll talk about that when we get together 3 weeks from now. But let me just tell you one thing on the, when I was in law enforcement for the Sub-Ace Police Department at Bangor, after I got out of the Marine Corps, I was reading the Title IX, the Revised Code of Washington, and Title IX it's stated there that if a mother performs her own abortion, she can be charged with manslaughter. It was still a state law back then. I don't know if it is now. I left in 1994, the police department. I was a cop for 10 years. But if a woman performs her own abortion, she can be charged with manslaughter. So then I looked up in the Title IX Revised Code of Washington, how do they define manslaughter? And they said, well, it's one type of homicide. You know, it's an unintentional type, but it's one type of homicide. And then I looked up homicide in Revised Code of Washington, and it said it's the killing of an innocent human being. When a woman performs her own abortion, not just in Washington State, in any of the 50 states, if a woman performs her own abortion, the baby is a human being, and the mother can be charged with murder, or at least manslaughter. If it's a state-approved executioner, then it's not a human being. That's the kind of nonsense we have. That's why there's been... that's why there have been, you know, a drunk driver hits a car, killing the pregnant woman and her child. And some states will charge that as two counts of vehicular homicide. I know one judge wept and said, I wish I could charge this guy with two counts of homicide, but I can't because of Roe versus Wade. And, but that's the kind of culture we live in. And that's why what we're going to see throughout this course on ethics, if, you know, Nietzsche said God is dead, okay, but in reality, if God is dead, meaning that if belief in God is no longer considered a viable belief in our culture, if God is dead, then I will argue that man is dead as well. So what we're seeing now is the death of man. With Darwin and even before with Enlightenment, rationalism was the death of God. Then the 20th century was the death of truth and morality and meaning. And now the 21st century is man trying to create his own truth, his own morality, his own meaning. And but that's the death of man. That's what it's all about. So, I'll be honest with you, you know, the people will hear me talk and they'll say, man, you sound like a pessimistic guy. I think I'm the most optimistic guy on planet Earth, but I know Jesus. And if I didn't know Jesus, I'd just say, you know what, head for the hills and hope nobody finds you, but this world is all messed up right now. But because I know Jesus, it's like, you know, it's going to be as bad as the ancient Roman Empire and the ancient Babylonian Empire, except governments of this world have technology that those Nebuchadnezzar could only dream of, that Caesar Nero could only dream of. But whatever the case, so what do? Good thing is, in bad times and good times, our job description remains the same. We personally know Jesus, and we make him known, and we're going to preach his name until the day we die or the day he comes back and takes his stand upon the earth. All right, God bless you.
It's not one of the issues, singers.